Hi, this is Burt Reynolds. You listen to Wiener's Barbecue, and they're not giving me a damn thing for this.
Welcome to Wiener's Barbecue here on 101.9 FM CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, every Tuesday. Do you know who that is?
No clue.
Do you know who that is?
I have no idea.
It comes circle what I'm gonna where that came in. There is a reason for it.
Oh, okay.
I would love to play it every week I can.
Uh-huh.
But I have a reason for saying it. You guys are tied into the grand story of it all.
Really?
Sort of. But we'll get into that in a minute. Anyways, on Wiener's Barbecue today, we've got with us right now Brent Malish from the UBC Thunderbird men's basketball team, freshman player Vern Knopp, assistant coach of the UBC Thunderbirds men's basketball team, always with us. We'll get to them in a second. Dave Chernichan from News 1130 will be on at 5 o'clock for some hockey talk. Jeff Francis, former UBC Thunderbird great. A great baseball player here on the campus. Just got to Denver, I think he said yesterday, getting set for the new year with the Colorado Rockies. He'll be with us at 5:20. And then Tom Wolski from the Vancouver Province will be with us at 5:40 for some horse talk. So that's the show.
Not bad.
Now, that was the Jerry Garcia Band. It was a Grateful Dead song, and the song was Ripple, which really has nothing to do with anything, the song itself. Bill Walton. I met Bill Walton yesterday.
Oh, I see. Okay.
He was here for the Jewish Community Center sports dinner.
Okay.
Me being Jewish, I helped out a little bit with the committee and all that, and I was at the dinner yesterday. Bill Walton, renowned, I think he's in their Hall of Fame, Grateful Dead fan. You're basketball players. He's a basketball player. No?
I've heard that about him before. That
there you go.
He's a Grateful Dead.
There you
so
go.
That kind of makes sense now.
I actually asked him. I asked Bill Walton yesterday. You know, you're supposed to meet these athletes and you're supposed to ask them, you know, sports questions and all that stuff. Well, the one I wanted to know from Bill Walton was, what did I miss out on more? I never saw a basketball game at the Boston Gardens and I never saw a live Grateful Dead concert. That's what I asked him.
Wow.
And he said both.
Yeah.
He said both.
I could see him doing that.
And then we started talking about, there's this band I used to follow around called Fish. They're sort of like after the Grateful Dead. And Bill Walton and I talked about Fish. We found a concert the two of us were at together.
Really?
And then I had my picture taken with him later in the evening. And he's like, I remember you. You're the guy who asked me if he was worse off not seeing Larry Bird or the Grateful Dead.
Wow.
So, great guy, Bill Walton. So, we will be playing, whether they like it or not today. I'll play another Jerry Garcia song later on in the show. So.
That song wasn't that bad, though.
No, of course it's not. Of course it's not. Now, Brent Malish, now, just before we get into you guys in the weekend, You're not a Grateful Dead fan. I can tell from the ringtone you had.
The ringtone you had.
Sorry, you just got to talk a little closer. Sorry. All right. So the ringtone. So that wasn't hippie music.
No.
You had bursting out of your phone there. What were we listening to there?
Oh, I think it was the game Dreams that was going on.
I don't know what that means. I'm out of the music. I was never quite in it, but more than ever now.
Yeah, I'm in the same club. I've never heard of them. So.
What's your ringtone, Vern?
My ringtone's Monday Night Football.
Actually, Monday Night Football.
Yeah, that's a good choice.
Mine right now, I actually have to get my cell phone fixed. I've got a ring on. My cell phone broke. Oh. I left it in the bathroom when the shower was on. So they fixed it, but you can take out the card and put in another phone, and then you know that whole thing?
Yeah.
So I got my cards now back in this phone. It's my original phone, but it's not ringing loud enough.
Oh, okay.
So I'm always missing calls, so I have to take it in. That's a fascinating story. That's radio for you, talking about cell phones. Well, with us right now is Brent Malish and Vern Knopp from the UBC Thunderbird men's basketball team. So, guys, let's get into the weekend first of all. And I got to ask you what went on here. You're now 18-3, still in great shape to win the division. We'll get into this weekend's games later on. But you had a 71-67 win over a very tough Alberta team. You had two tough matchups on the weekend. And then on the Saturday in Saskatchewan, in Saskatoon, 79-75 losers. Only the third game you guys have lost this season, but all in the new year. They've all been against good teams, but they've all been in the new year. So, Coach, got to ask you, I mean, you got lit up by, how do I pronounce this, Andrew
Spagrud.
28 points, 16 rebounds.
Yeah, we had a little difficulty with him. Even last year, we played Canada West Finals. I think he had, or the semifinals, he had 27 on us, but we were able to win last year. But he's one of the top post players in the country. Definitely the top post player in Canada West, and he's a tough matchup, obviously. We did what we could on him, but unfortunately, he got the better of us.
And, Brent, you're being factored into the lineup as the season has gone on here. You know, you're averaging about 14 minutes a game, so you're getting good minutes for a freshman. Yeah. But how did you feel you played on the weekend?
Well, I felt I played all right. I came in off the bench and contributed what I could, and as Vern said, had to try and guard Spagrud for a while in the against Saskatchewan, and he got to the hoop, and it's a little bit tougher playing against a fourth-year guy that's had a lot more experience. So
he's a freshman. What are you putting him in that situation for?
Well, he had Andrew had the rest of our post players in foul trouble, so we put the rookie on him. And actually, Brent, to his credit, did a good job. He played him tough, and there was times when I think he got under Spagrud's skin and gave him some problems. But I said he's a tough matchup, as Brent found out, as all our post players found out.
Toughest guy you've matched up against in CIS basketball?
Definitely. I would say Spagrud and Christensen are probably the two toughest matchups I've had to play against this season.
Aaron Christensen on SFU. So what did you have to do? I mean, you know, it's a big game for you guys, but we're getting to the playoff now. This weekend, you know, you got to win both games this weekend. So, you know, some big minutes for you in a big game. How'd that feel?
I felt good. I mean, I always want to play minutes and help contribute as much as I can to the team's victory. But as long as I can keep contributing and hopefully we can keep playing and well and winning. So,
cool. So, Coach, tight win on Friday, a loss on Saturday. Your overall thoughts on how you guys played this weekend? Tough road games, though, but your overall thoughts?
Yeah, both games were tough. And we knew going in that the month of January was going to be toughest part of our schedule. And, you know, the fact that we've lost three times, you know, it isn't necessarily a bad thing. Both, you know, anytime you go on the road in Canada West, it's always tough. Alberta, in fact, that was the first time Coach Hansen in our 7 years we've actually won in Alberta in a league game. So that was kind of a monkey off our back in that way on Friday. Saturday, Saskatchewan, we just didn't come out and play as hard as we need to do for the 40 minutes. And if you don't play hard for 40 minutes, you're going to usually end up on the wrong side of the score.
Is there a bit of a worry with you guys right now in the coaching staff where this is the area, you know, you're going to probably be in Brandon, but you're going to have to be in Alberta or Manitoba or Saskatchewan for the Canada West Final Four, and you guys don't seem to be playing your best basketball in these provinces right now?
Well, I don't know if we haven't been playing our best basketball, but I think it's, you know, attributed to some of the teams we've played. Brandon, Saskatchewan, if you look at their record, I don't know if they've lost a home game this year. That seems to be the trend in Canada West. But like we've told our players, championship teams dominate at home and they win the tough games on the road. And be more than happy to go to Brandon and get another crack at them, because I think we'll see a different outcome next time.
So tell us about Brent Malish here. What kind of player we got?
Brent's been actually playing great for us. Coming out of high school, he was one of the top players in BC. In fact, junior national team player. Right now, unfortunately for Brent, he's kind of playing out of position. We've kind of turned him into more of a post player, and he played perimeter for most of his career. So there's been an adjustment period for him. But he's been, he sucked it up and hasn't complained. And just anytime he goes in and plays hard and starting to find a shot a little bit too now. So he's starting to nail some shots from the outside, which he's capable of. And we expect good things from him for the rest of this year and future years.
Why'd you come to UBC, Brent?
I think it was a combination of a lot of things. Obviously, coming here, having the great coaches like Randy and Kev and Vern. Other thing was just the location of it. I mean, I was only recruited by two Canadian schools, so it was either here or at Santa Fe over in Halifax over there. So that was probably the two main deciding factors there.
Now, those are two great programs, so did you basically let it be known to the recruiters that you're going to one of those two schools?
I never told anyone in Canada that I was going to either one of those schools. It just happened to be like that, and it was the only two schools that in Canada that recruited me, so... I guess they thought I was going down to the States or something.
Did you know that he was only recruited by two schools?
No, we were actually surprised. We kind of had, hearing from Randy and Kevin that he was just looking at our two schools, but surprised that other schools didn't recruit him. For whatever reason, it seems to happen sometimes. People think a player like Brent, because he played for a junior national team, that obviously is looking south, and they just assume that, and we never assume until they tell us.
Like the gorgeous girl who can't get a date.
There you go.
Exactly like that. It's exactly like that. Were you recruited by American schools?
Yeah, I was. I was recruited by a couple schools in a couple weaker divisions, and I'm a really competitive person. I just want to win, and I thought this was my best place to try and win.
So, and Graham Bath, is that the guy you were showing around campus today?
No, that was another recruit.
Another recruit. Can we say who this guy is?
Sure. His name was Nick Adair, island guy.
What? Say it again.
Plays at GP Vanier out on the island.
Okay.
So, from Courtney.
Okay.
So we had him out today on the campus just for a visit as well.
What school? What high school?
GP Vanier.
Okay. Okay, never heard of it before.
Not many people have. Well,
he's committed to UBC?
Had him out for a campus visit, so it sounds like it's between us and Victoria right now.
Ah, so the race is on.
The race is on.
It's a fun part of it, hey?
Yeah, it is. It's pretty exciting.
It's a fun part of it. Graham Bath, though, your former teammate at Brookswood, has committed to play to UBC next year. Tell us about this guy.
He's a very tough and competitive guy. I mean, before he... came onto my high school team, it wasn't very competitive. I was dominating in practice, to say the least, and then he came on and he just helped me push me a little bit, and I pushed him, and I think that's why our high school team was a little more successful than it would have been if we hadn't have had him. So he's a tough post player, about 6'5", 6'6", and big body, good leader, and hopefully we'll see some good things out of him in next year and years to come.
Yeah, so, Coach, let me ask you, because Casey's obviously leaving. He's gone. It's going to be a different look, though, next year. I'd like to get into this because Brent's with us right now. And, you're going to be losing Jason Beard, but you're going to have a lot of guys back. So, what kind of team are we looking at for UBC come next season?
Well, for the first time in a few years, you're going to be looking at a very young team. But it's a team that we're very excited for. I think you got a good a preview of that a week ago when Casey couldn't play against Trinity. You saw the kind of performance we had. We had probably 5-6 guys in double figures. Everybody contributed on the defensive end, rebounding, and that's what we're looking for next year. I don't think you might not see that one guy averaging 20-something like Casey does every night, but it's going to be more by committee, which in turn will make it tougher for other teams to tougher for other teams to match up with us. So we're looking forward to it.
And how do you see, say, a Brent Malish, and how do you think this Graham Bath will fit in next year, and Alex Murphy? What are we looking at with these young players?
Well, we'll start with Graham. We see him coming. He's going to be a first-year player, so he's going to go through his growing pains.
Right.
He is a little undersized height-wise for CIS, but he makes up for it in heart and determination, kind of a guy that he reminds us of Pete Wathy, who played for us a few years ago. He's always got his motor running. He's always working hard, looking to bang. And, he'll come off the bench and contribute minutes, give us an element of toughness that we've been lacking. As far as Brent and Murphy, they're the big part of the future of the program. As second-year players next year, we're going to expect them to take over a bit of a leadership role. especially from Alex, just because he's the point guard and is going to have the ball more times than not. And we're expecting big things for them next year, and they are the future of UBC basketball.
You like to hear that?
It's been said, but take it one day at a time and just look forward to and work hard.
That's the answer you want to hear, hey?
Love hearing that, yeah.
Well, let's get into this weekend, guys. Big games for you. You should win them, but you have to win them.
Yep.
Because Victoria has the same matchups as you this weekend. You're tied right now. Shows how big those games in Vic were. That Saturday night win is proving to be the difference right now. You're both 18-3 right now. You hold the tiebreaker. You won 2 of 3 against them in the season. And if you don't sweep, chances are you're not going to get home court, and you're in a whole mess for the playoffs. So let's get into it, though. You got Thompson Rivers coming to town on Friday, a team with 1 win against 20 losses. They beat Fraser Valley last weekend. You got to play on Saturday, 90-82. So they've won 1 of their last 2.
Yeah.
They're getting better.
They're coming in on a hot streak.
Fraser Valley, 6-15, will be your opponents on Saturday, both games at home. You can't ask for a better way to end a season needing 2 wins. And as coaches, it probably takes the pressure off. It probably makes it easier for you that they do have to win these games. So it's a great situation for you guys.
It is a good situation. When we got them on our own home court, new teams into the CIS, we don't really need to motivate the players. They know we'll win 2 games. We host first place. We have first place in the division, and we host playoffs throughout. So players just got to come out and take care of business.
So, Brent, no taking these guys lightly. I mean, it is a combined 7-35, but if you do lose 1 game, you're probably going to Victoria week 2 of the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, we just got to come out and work hard, and we know the players they have on their team, and both teams have a couple guys that can go off and really hurt us, so we're focusing right now on shutting those guys down and playing hard defensively on our home court.
Yeah, Charlie Spur. Averaging 20 points per game this season for Thompson Rivers, going to be here on Friday. We will be broadcasting that one at 8 o'clock, the women at 6:15. Tell us about this guy, Vern.
He's a second-year player now, point guard for them. Little small, but can really shoot the ball, takes the ball, good ball handler. It's kind of a situation where he's successful just for the fact that he's really their only guy that can score.
Right.
So he really can't take a bad shot for his team, and that's kind of why his numbers are maybe a little inflated, but to give him credit, he's had a great season.
And you beat them, you played them twice in November, you won one by 37 points, but the other by 12. Was that 12-point game close, though?
No, it wasn't that close. They had a few shots late in the game. We didn't actually at that time play very well. I think that was the Friday game. Defensively, we were horrible, and we kind of showed our true colors the following day, kind of challenged our guys to come out and play harder, and they did, and that was the result of the 36-point win.
And, Brent, you played Fraser Valley. You beat them by 15 points, and the other one was a 7-point win for UBC. That one, that's a pretty tight score, 7 points. So what do you know about these guys?
Well, they got a lot of older players on their team. They're a pretty seasoned squad. So they got a couple good post guys in Jamie Vaughn and Joel Havlin. So we got to come out and, just play hard on our home court. I mean, we can't take these guys lightly, and we need these games.
You excited to get to the playoffs already, though? You had enough of this regular season stuff?
Yeah. Playoffs are always where the teams are made, so regular season doesn't mean nothing unless you win in the playoffs.
Awesome. So, Coach, 1 weekend to go in the regular season. If you guys do win this weekend, do you call it a successful regular season?
Successful regular season, yeah, for sure. But as we said from day one, it's we'll be judged on what happens at our performance at Nationals, and I think the whole team would feel like anything less than a national title will be a disappointment this year.
So there you have it. So UBC will be taking on Thompson Rivers on Friday night and Fraser Valley on Saturday night. 2 wins, and you will have won the Canada West Pacific regular season championship.
That's right. And also it'll be Casey and Jason Beering, Adam Friesen, and Sean Stewart's last home league game. UBC uniform.
Yeah, see, I couldn't get too into that because it's home regular season, and there's going to be more. I hear you, though.
It'll be an emotional night for those players.
Seniors night.
So it's always an emotional time, but which kind of works to our favor because Casey and JB won't want to be losing that last regular season game.
Cool. So two great players right there. So you want to do some Super Bowl talk?
Sounds good.
I got about 10 minutes here before we're going to have Dave on. I got to fit it in at some point. So let's get into it right now. So we had the Super Bowl on Sunday.
Yep.
Did you watch it?
I did watch it.
Where'd you watch it?
I watched it at my my residence, actually.
Ah, the residence.
Yeah, the residence.
Where are you from?
I'm from Langley.
You're from Langley, correct. Yeah. Okay, so, all right. You didn't want to go home.
After a long road trip, you just want to kind of chill out and not have to drive.
And Vern, you were where?
I was at the Treehouse Pub out in Poco, hanging out with my some of my best friends, closest friends.
Aw, how adorable. I was at my buddy's place, my buddy with the big screen high def.
Nice.
Big screen high def.
Well, we had the big screen TV, so we couldn't complain.
We were doing that, and you and I were both a mess, a disaster.
Yeah, I guess you could say that.
I don't know if I should have said that on air.
I don't know if we should have, but no.
All right, what was the score? It was 29-12?
29-17, I believe.
29-17.
Yeah.
So they almost covered.
Oh, come on.
They almost covered that.
It wasn't that close.
They
almost
covered. All right, so here's the question, okay? And this was brought up to me yesterday, and I really try to think of this. The whole moniker of Peyton Manning has never won a big one. He finally does it on Sunday, and you know, he can never beat the Patriots, never get by Belichick. He does that, all that stuff. Is he a better quarterback now? Can we say he's a better quarterback now than before the weekend? That's the question.
Yeah, no question. I think he was a great quarterback before he even played the game. But as the saying goes, to be considered a great quarterback, you have to win the ultimate game, which is a Super Bowl. So now, you know, now it's basically just his numbers will back everything up. He's got his Super Bowl ring, and he's got the stats to back it up. He's already, numbers-wise, he's already in the Hall of Fame, and it's only going to get better from here.
Now then, is it fair, Brent, to say that, you know, would it make Casey Archibald a better UBC basketball player if you guys win the national championship?
Well, I mean, skill-wise, he's one of the best players I've played with.
Right.
And he comes out, competes every day at practice, but you... Everything's dependent on how many championships you win, and
it is, hey?
Unfortunately, it's not always fair. I mean, Dan Marino wasn't a bad quarterback because he didn't win a Super Bowl. His numbers say that, but he never gets his due credit because he didn't win the one. And, you know, as far as Casey goes, his numbers, what he's done here in UBC is you know, speaks for itself. He's already one of the best players to ever put a UBC uniform on. And if he brings us to the championship, he can go down as maybe the greatest player to ever play at UBC.
Elevate you.
Elevate you. Why not?
I personally was rooting against Peyton Manning this weekend.
I tried to tell you last week that they were going to win.
I found in these playoffs, I don't like the Colts at all. I discovered that. Because I don't like the Patriots. I just don't. Although I won money when they beat the Rams in the Super Bowl.
Okay.
I had them straight up to win
that
game.
That's a long time ago.
Thank you. But, you know.
Living in the past.
Well, that's all I can do. That's all I can do. Past is better than the present, I guess. Anyways, so... I'm not a Colts fan. I'm not a Patriots fan, and I find myself in the AFC Championship game, without a doubt, rooting for the Colts. The Patriots. I'm sorry.
Oh yeah,
the Patriots.
I
which
think
showed
we had
me.
That talk.
Yeah. So yeah. I realized right then and there how much I actually did dislike the Colts, and personally, I found it fun that Peyton Manning, he was that guy who had never won.
Yep.
And now that's over with, so...
The great ones ultimately win one, so... I've been trying to tell you for the last 3 weeks to a month that the Colts were the team to beat, and you didn't seem to want to agree with me, but... I hate to say I told you so, but...
Now the other one is, this was a rainy Super Bowl. And, you know, the whole thing, which I don't like in the Super Bowl, is it's always played in either California, Florida, or indoors.
Yeah.
It's what it is. So we saw the rainy Super Bowl, and Rex Grossman had the two interceptions, and he dropped the two snaps and all that stuff. So elements did come into play. First time it ever rained at a Super Bowl. Is this the last time it's ever going to rain at the Super Bowl, basically? Or do you think, I mean, the question, Vern, is do they have to stay in these sunny places, or do you think we can, you know, move around, do it in New York, do it in Green Bay, do it in Chicago?
I think they should keep it in the sunny places because ultimately it's for the fans. Fans don't want to go to a cold climate place, especially outdoors. I mean, they had it at Detroit a year ago, indoors.
Really, do we really have to care so much about the fans that either have the connections or can afford to get into the Super Bowl, though?
Well, ultimately the fans are the ones that that pay for the player's salary. So I think you got to kind of, it's a corporate world now. You got to kind of take care of them.
It's the TV viewers that are paying for those salaries, though.
True enough, but... I mean, it's a warm climate. It's better for the players. I mean, it didn't really matter for the Colts. They're an indoor team, and the word of rule was, well, if it rains bad weather, it's going to favor the Bears, and obviously it didn't. I mean, maybe it worked against the Bears for whatever way, but I think it's more of a spectator sport. You got to kind of keep it to the warm climates or keep it indoors. No one wants to go to a cold climate place and watch football anymore.
What about you, Brent? You like to see the natural elements play, you know, be there for the Super Bowl?
Well, I was a soccer player before I was a basketball player, so it was all about dealing with the elements in that game. So
there you go. See? So you wouldn't mind, you know, seeing a Super Bowl play? I mean, why wouldn't it be great seeing a Super Bowl in Green Bay?
I don't know about that, even though they're a great football town, but...
People want to go to a place where they can have a lot of fun, and it's not just about Super Bowl. Is not just about the game anymore. Ultimately, it is, but it's more about the week, the build up to it, the parties, the events, everything that goes on. It all comes full circle.
All right, we disagree twice. Rex Grossman, brutal or taking too much heat?
Taking too much heat. It's a team game. You know, Peyton Manning got all the abuse when they were losing, and it's a team game. I mean, Bears defense couldn't stop the Colts. Colts were on the offense was on the field a long time, and. You know, it can't just all be accredited to Rex Grossman. I mean, he wasn't the top player going into it, and he played like he wasn't the top player. So,
but that was extra special bad the way he played, though. I mean, maybe not in the first half so much, although he did have the one fumbled snap. But I think it was in the second half, two horrible interceptions.
Well,
and the fumble. It was the way the interceptions looked, though. I mean, they were bad.
Well, the last one where Bob Sanders intercepted it, it was actually the right read. He just threw it a little too late and kind of hung it up there, but...
Hung it up there.
It was a tough play, but I think if you look at his numbers, they were probably worse the week before against New Orleans. They had, I mean, he threw for less than 50% of his passes.
But he didn't
have the
he didn't have the turnovers.
Yeah, turnovers are part of the game. I mean, Colts had their turnovers too with the fumbles, right? So it kind of goes both ways, and he can't control when his running backs fumbles, and the fact they couldn't stop the Colts offense.
Brent, you saw that he was bad.
I have to agree with Vern on this one. I mean. The Colts
wrong. Double teamed up here, right?
Year's coach. I don't know. You know, maybe we've got a little sucking up going on here. I don't know. No, I'm just kidding, everybody. You didn't think he was that bad? You thought it was more the team, hey?
I thought it was the team. I mean, yeah. The Colts were on the field for a lot longer. Then the second half drive, where at the start of the second half, they'd march down the field. And how do you deal with that?
I don't know. And Joseph Addai, great game in the Super Bowl.
For a rookie to step up like that, huge game.
What do you have, 10 receptions?
Nine receptions.
One off
the Super Bowl record, which is held by Jerry Rice. With 10.
Really?
Yep.
Really? Look at this stat guy. What, you a Jerry Rice fan right there?
I love Jerry Rice. Jerry Rice is the best receiver ever.
Well, I agree, but you're a little young to be a Jerry Rice fan, I believe.
I started watching football at a young age.
Okay.
I'll say that.
We'll let you off the hook on that one. But Addai, I mean, what a game. And the question sort of is, great drafting by the Colts getting him, but they lose Edge, and then this guy comes in and just, I mean, he had an excellent season, especially in the second half, if I recall right. And then great Super Bowl for Addai, and Dominic Rhodes ran all over him, too.
Dominic Rhodes had a great game, Reggie Wayne. I mean, there wasn't a guy on the offense for the Colts that played poorly. The offensive line did a phenomenal job of opening up the holes for the running backs as well and protecting Peyton, I think, giving up one sack the whole game.
And what was that? What's your ringtone?
Dreams by the Game.
Dreams by the Game. So is that similar to Prince?
No.
Were you? No, not at all.
No.
Eh? Not at all. Dreams by the Game.
Yeah.
I'm still not hit down with the groove anymore. You know?
I hear you.
It's all over for me now. But Prince? What'd you think? What'd you think of Prince?
Personally, I don't like the halftime show as much as I do the game. So.
Well, good for you, but as for a half... I'm sorry. Who does like the halftime show, personally? My mom is interested in the halftime show. But did you like it? Did you think Prince was all right?
I thought it was a good show.
Yep.
It was not bad.
What'd you think of Prince?
Didn't watch it.
Didn't even watch it?
Nope. Too busy talking to people and giving Bears fans a hard time about losing the game. So
too good for it, eh?
Just boring.
And the other one, did you see it when the pregame show was going on, that whole thing they had going on the field?
No, I had no chance to do that.
Jumpers, and they had a whole...
We didn't have a whole lot of time. We were just coming back from Saskatchewan that day of travel, so it wasn't a lot of time to watch the pregame stuff.
I do less. Did you enjoy the game, Brent? You thought it was a good Super Bowl?
Yeah, I enjoyed it, actually. It was a good game.
Yeah.
It was pretty exciting in the first quarter when all those turnovers were happening.
Yeah, and how about Devin Hester there?
Devin Hester was worth the price of admission alone on that one play. Put a little fear into the Colts fans, but we prevailed in the long run. So,
Colt, it's annoying talking to you as a Colts fan.
Long-time Colts fan, it couldn't have been a better game.
Oh, awesome. Well, do appreciate you guys coming in. Vern Knopp and Brent Malish from the UBC Thunderbird men's basketball team. Split the games on the weekend. You got Thompson Rivers here on Friday. UC of Fraser Valley here on Saturday. CITR will be broadcasting the game on Friday. If you sweep them, you clinch home court advantage in the first two rounds of the playoffs. So go out and sweep them.
Let's go get them.
Awesome. Thanks, Coach.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Brent. Right,
thanks a lot.
Appreciate it. All right. We will be right back in a moment with Dave Chernichan from News 1130. Thanks, guys. Everybody, welcome back to Winner's Barbecue here on 101.9 FM CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Dave, are you a Grateful Dead fan at all?
No, I'm not really a Grateful Dead fan.
Okay. I'm playing it because I saw Bill Walton speak last night.
Oh, yeah. How'd that go?
It was wonderful.
I heard him a little bit on the competitor's radio station in the morning, and the guy's just a phenomenal speaker.
It wasn't such an interview they put on, was it? It was more of...
No.
I think Bill Walton, I think the count was he spoke for 17 minutes, and there was basically 1.5 questions asked to him.
Yeah.
I think that was the count. No, he was awesome. I liked it. I will say this is I didn't have a ticket, actually, originally to the Jewish Community Center sports dinner.
I thought you had pull on that.
I should, but, you know, I don't have pull on anything, Dave. But my father, who was going, got sick, so I went with him and his friends, who were all, you know, in between the age of about 63 and 75, was the table. And by the end of Walton's speech, which I thought was great, it was all about the Grateful Dead and the Boston Celtics. What else can I ask for? But by the end of the speech, I was the only one left at the table. So I liked it, but some people didn't.
And that was only probably 2 hours in.
Exactly. He went on for a good 40 minutes, I think, which was just great. Anyways, with us right now, Dave Chernichan from News 1130. So, Dave, we got another big hockey game, and it's a fun hockey season to follow this year because it seems that the games actually do matter. We don't know if this team is going to get home ice advantage in the first round of the playoffs, win the division, or even make the playoffs. Another big, and it seems like we've been saying that a lot lately, another big divisional game tonight in about an hour's time at Edmonton. What kind of game are we looking at tonight between the Canucks and the Oilers?
Well, you know what? I'm the first to say that I am not a fan of this unbalanced schedule. I like seeing every team, but, I mean, if I could see the Canucks in Edmonton or the Canucks in Calgary play 10, 15 times a year against each other, that's just great hockey. I mean, there's a hard hitting, there's skating, there's emotion, you know, there's a lot of stuff that goes into these two rivalries. And I think that the Canucks can really expect a fast-paced, hard-hitting game. Edmonton's going to be looking for some redemption after last week's loss at GM Place. Edmonton hasn't been playing well on the road, but at home they're a different team. And I really think that this time the Canucks will be in for a tougher test.
Yeah, and Dave, the Canucks did win it when they played last Thursday, but also Edmonton was coming off of a back-to-back that night, playing at home the night before and trying to play Vancouver on Thursday night on the road.
Well, I think, though, up and beyond that, I mean, yeah, you catch a team fatigued, which is always a good thing. But up and above beyond that, since Christmas, the Canucks have learned that they can beat these guys. They can beat divisional teams, whether it's Minnesota, whether it's Edmonton, whether it's Colorado, whether it's Calgary. And that's what you need at this time of year when these points are so much more important than, say, playing an Eastern Conference team or even a Central Division or a Pacific Division team.
Because, Dave, isn't tonight, though, and it's sort of fun following it this season, you know, 29 games to go. The Canucks win tonight, granted, you know, and assuming whatever happens in the Calgary-Chicago game, but they may be once again tied for the, well, they'll be losing the tiebreaker to Calgary, but they'll be right there for the division race again. But if they lose tonight, boom, you're suddenly only 4 points up on ninth place to hold on to that last playoff spot. I mean, it's that tight right now.
It is that tight, and it's amazing. I mean, people talk about why we haven't seen many trades in the NHL this year. Well, you only have to look at the Western Conference with how tight it is, especially the Northwest Division. You know, I mean, there's so much parity going on right now in the standings that you just, you don't know what's going to happen night to night. And, you know, it's not like the Canucks are playing bad hockey. But they are a little bit too reliant on Roberto Luongo right now. And one thing that they're going to have to do is they're going to have to give him a good game in front of him in order to beat Edmonton, which is a team that loves driving to the net, that loves beating up on defensemen, and loves taking advantage of any open ice that they have.
Yeah, Dave, one quick question, then I'll get into Luongo here. But, you know, we saw last season with the salary cap, and we see the parity this season. Long term, 4 or 5 years from now, do we want to see this kind of parity every single year in the National Hockey League?
Well, I think the schedule will be reviewed after next season, and Gary Bettman at the All-Star break made that commitment. From what I'm hearing, Bettman isn't really a fan of the unbalanced schedule, but he's got to do what his owners tell him to do. The owners of the league, especially those in the East, love this because, I mean, hell, why fly out to the West Coast 18 times a year when you can fly out once?
But Dave, my question is I think the standings are close like this because of the salary cap and you can't have the great teams anymore. Long term, do you think that will be the way we want the NHL to be? All this, you know, the teams are basically the same every year.
Well, I've told you from the beginning, I'm not a fan of the salary cap.
Right.
Call me a player's guy, call me whatever. But I think that the salary cap has taken away the more dominant teams. It has taken away a lot of the ability of teams who draft well, a lot teams who are able to sign the key free agents to the puzzle. I think what it's done is it's almost dumbed down the general manager spot. Yes, a general manager has to be smarter because he has to spend his money a lot more wisely. But on the flip side, when you didn't have the salary cap, general managers had to go with what they had. And, you know, if a team didn't draft well, you take a, you know, you take any base team that didn't draft well over the years, you know, they struggle. I mean, you look at Nashville. Okay, Nashville's a prime example of a team who, since their inception, has drafted very well. Okay, they have good scouts. They've drafted very well. And they've been able to build a winner around that. Now, the problem is, in about 3 or 4 years, Nashville, if they don't keep drafting well, they're in trouble.
Right.
Right?
No, and what I don't like personally about the salary cap is, you see it in the National Football League now, is you can never have that. And I don't buy into the fact that the New England Patriots were a dynasty, because that was pretty much different players every year, except for maybe 10, 11 guys. But you could never have that true great team that's great for, say, 6 or 7 years anymore.
No,
and is together.
And you know what? I miss that.
Yeah. You will never have, it's impossible to have, a New York Islanders of the late 1970s, early 80s.
Or even the Edmonton Oilers, yeah, and the Montreal Canadiens.
Yeah. It's impossible. You can't have that anymore.
No, I mean, because eventually, if you draft good players, those players are going to want to be paid. And you're going to either be forced to trade those players and make some tough decisions, or you're going to have to be forced to pay a player who you might not think is worth that much, you know, the money that he would get on the open market. I mean, a classic example of that is you take a guy like Willie Mitchell. Okay, is Willie Mitchell a $3.5 million defenseman? No, he's not. But that's the going rate for a defenseman of his caliber.
On the free agent market. Pay it or you don't get him. It's that simple.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you're almost forced to pay the players what you need. I mean, this is where general managers have to be smart, is because they have to make sure that if they sign free agents, that they sign the proper free agents. And if they sign the proper free agents, is that enough to get them going? Right? I mean, you take the Canucks, their drafting has been, I would say, average at best. But, I mean, where have they really gone to find the players that they could use? I mean, you look at a team, I'll use Nashville again. I mean, they're a team where they have built their team, their young team, around the draft and then signed key free agents like a Paul Kariya, or Jason Arnott to help those young players around. And I don't think the Canucks have done a good job at doing that.
No. And, Dave, back to the Vancouver Canucks right now. Calgary goes out, I think it's only been about a week now. They acquired Craig Conroy in a trade, gets two games in his first game back with the Calgary Flames coming over from Los Angeles. So they've now made a move. 3 weeks till the trade deadline. I think it's 3 weeks today exactly. I think it's February the 27th. Vancouver, when are things going to start to heat up on the trade market? And, you know, these are the things you guys are following every day. What are some of the rumors that are starting to develop out there?
You know what? The rumors around the Canucks have been absolutely non-existent for a couple months now. Everybody knows that what Nonis is looking for. We know he's looking for a new centerman to replace Ryan Kesler. Okay, he's looking for a more offensive guy. He'd like to also add another defenseman who can take some of the pressures off, because let's face it, do you really want to go into the playoffs with your third pairing as Rory Fitzpatrick and and Lucas Krajicek, who have really struggled this season? I mean, you look at the first two goals that Columbus scored last week. Salo and Krajicek were both on the ice at the same time, not touching the guy in front of the net. Now, you know, I mean, now the fact is, what do you want to give up? Do you want to bring in a rental player who you're not on the on the list for next season? Or do you bring in a player who has contract left and take your chances, right? I mean, the good part about the Canucks is, you know, with Ryan Kesler being gone as much as he is, up to 12 to 16 weeks, they have $1.9 million left on the cap in free money.
Right.
Open up some room.
A $1.9 million player. I mean, they don't have that much money, but they can get a player making $1.9 million for the whole season.
Well, see, how the salary cap works is you're allowed to go over the cap number. Okay, as long as your salary owing doesn't exceed the cap.
Right.
And what I mean by that is, you know, if you at this time of year, the trade deadline time of year, if you have, say, $3 million left in salary cap room and you want to make a run, well, you can go get a $5 million player because there's only about $1.5, maybe $2 million left on his contract, and that's the number that goes towards the cap, not the official salary number. So if you got $3 million left and you add a $5 million player, yes, technically you're $2 million over the salary cap, but the money owing isn't over the cap.
Right, and the guy, Dave, everybody's going to be asking about, and I'll ask about it too, Peter Forsberg. Injured all season. Who knows if he's even going to play five games for you, but he is a guy who, with how tight the whole league is top to bottom, if Peter Forsberg's healthy, if Peter Forsberg's going, he could bring your team the Stanley Cup. He's that good, and he's out there.
But do you give up what Philadelphia would want for Forsberg?
Well, they're going to trade him. There's no doubt they're going to trade him, so are you willing to give up more than what the next guy's willing to give up? That's the question.
Well, we know Vancouver's on the list, okay? Forsberg and Marcus Naslund are very tight friends, and if Forsberg could stay healthy, he might be the missing piece that the Canucks need.
Well, hold on, Dave. Here's the thing. If Forsberg is healthy and Forsberg's going, he is the missing piece. I mean, I don't think there's a question about that, is there?
No, absolutely, and he fills every role that you would need. A power forward who can score, who's a good teammate. okay, and can distribute the puck. I mean, he is the perfect hockey player when healthy, right? But the question is, how healthy will he be come playoff time?
So,
Do you give up valuable, knowing now how important the draft is, do you give up valuable draft picks and or young assets to acquire Forsberg, even though last year you tried to do the same thing, bringing in a veteran presence with three defensemen in Eric Weinrich,
Keith Carney, and Sean Brown.
Yeah. You know, and all three fizzled.
The difference, Dave, is, the difference there is, even if those guys worked out, Sean Brown, Keith Carney, Eric Weinrich, combined on their greatest days, aren't half of what Peter Forsberg is.
I understand that, but you also gave up a total of five draft picks to acquire the guy, right, and you basically wrote off your own draft in Vancouver.
What are the rumors that Philadelphia is asking for, and what are some of the players being floated out there for Forsberg?
You know what? It's so quiet right now on what's happening that, you know what, to be honest, I haven't even really dug deep into it, and that'll be my goal for here in the next few weeks because of the trade deadline coming up. But, I mean, what we have to realize here is Dave Nonis will make a move. Who he acquires, we don't know yet. I mean, don't forget, he's going to try and shop Jan Boulis. He's going to try and possibly get rid of Mark Schwinnard. If he can get rid of both, that will be a bonus. If he can't, who knows which one he'll keep. He may end up keeping both. But we know for a fact that, you know, both those guys, he's going to try and trim down that salary because that's $2.4 million sitting right there.
Who's dumb enough to take those guys is my question. But so goalie they're set, but so they're basically looking for a defenseman and a scoring center. So that's actually a lot they're trying to get right now.
Well, it is. And you know, I mean, don't forget, if you can get Kessler back for the playoffs, you have added depth, okay?
Yeah.
You move, you know, you might, Elaine Vigneault might have to do some line juggling because you'll have one extra defenseman, but that's not going to hurt you. That's not going to hurt you at all, right? I mean, it's better to have more than less come playoff time. And more options and less. You know, if Forsberg's the guy, which I personally don't think he is, and, you know, as much as I would like to see him here, I don't think he'll end up here, and I'd be shocked if he does. The big question is, what do you give up for him? Philadelphia is going to be going for draft picks because, I mean, barring, you know, drafting a couple players and Mike Richards and Jeff Carter, Philadelphia really hasn't done a good job drafting.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they've always been a team where, we'll just go out on the free agent market to fill our holes. To hell with the draft. You know, the draft is almost secondary. Well, it's proving that that's a wrong theory to have.
Well, we'll see what happens. 3 weeks, trade deadline. Canucks will be playing the Oilers in about 40 minutes' time. Dave, one last question, then I'll let you go. Thanks so much for doing this. What's going to be the score tonight? What are we looking at?
I think it's going to be a one-goal game. I usually don't cheer for this one because, I mean, as much as I have to remain an unbiased media person, when I take my media cap off, I'm both a Canucks fan and an Oilers fan, so I don't really cheer. I've been an Oilers fan longer than I have been a Canucks fan, but I'm going to say it's going to be a one-goal game either way. Luongo, of course, is going to get the start. He'll stand on his head again. But the one thing that I really want to see out of the Canucks tonight is see... they kind of got taken to them a little bit physically the other night against Calgary, and I want to see how they react tonight to another hard-pressing team in Edmonton and see if they can take the hits, because that's what Edmonton likes to do. And you know, Edmonton's going to be going hard for Roberto Luongo because they love crashing in front of the net, and if they get a piece of the goalie, they do. If they don't, they don't. And it's going to be an exciting game no matter what.
Awesome. Dave, always do appreciate it. Thanks a bundle.
Take care.
Dave Chernichan from News 1130. Always love having him on the show. Okay, folks, we got a couple more breaks to go, but right after this next little number will be Jeff Francis, former UBC Thunderbird, currently playing with the Colorado Rockies. I think he got there yesterday to Colorado, so we'll talk to Jeff Francis, who had quite an outstanding season.
There's the stats here.
Had quite a nice season last year for the Rockies. Look what this guy did in 2006. This is solid. 13 wins, 11 losses. He won 14 the year before, but he chopped off his ERA, got it to about cut off here. I think it's like 4.4. We'll ask Jeff about it. Anyways, Jeff Francis of the Colorado Rockies will be with us in a moment. You're listening to 101.9 FM. Okay, everybody, welcome back to Wiener's Barbecue here on 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. With us right now on the line from Denver. You're in Denver?
Yep.
From Denver, Colorado, from the Colorado Rockies, former UBC Thunderbird, Jeff Francis. And Jeff, I got to start things off with is Steve Nash. The whole thing here for me yesterday was we were hoping to have him at the Jewish Community Center Sports Dinner, but due to a scheduling snowstorm in Denver over the winter break, they had to make up the game in Denver last night, and you actually went to that game. And how long did Steve Nash last on the court?
Well, I think I was equally as disappointed as you. I went, it was the first game I've been to all season, and couldn't wait for Steve Nash to come into town and play. And, you know, got great seats. He played the first quarter, hurt his shoulder, didn't play again.
He didn't last the quarter.
Well, I think he hurt it halfway through, and then he played through it a bit, and then he came out for the second half with a ice pack on his shoulder, so he didn't play much longer.
Have you met Steve Nash?
No.
Really?
No.
You will. What do you got to elevate your play a little more here till you get up to that level, or are you going to meet him sometime soon?
Oh, I'm still working on things. I'm trying to get my gut up the athletic ladder here in Denver to meet Joe Sakic. So I'm trying to work it out.
Oh yeah, you've got. Well, the Broncos are king. Am I correct?
That's right.
So the Broncos are king, and you've got Carmelo Anthony and Allen Iverson in town.
Yeah. The new duo in town that seem to be sinking the Nuggets more than helping them.
Oh, that's awesome. But Colorado, Jeff, you know, you guys, of course, it is, though, before we go on, it is a great sports town, isn't it, Denver, Colorado?
It is. It's sports country. For every league of every sport there is in the country, I think Denver has a team. You know, there's a lacrosse team, arena football, there's a major league soccer team, there's minor league basketball, minor league hockey. They got just about everything.
But the other one is, you know, they have the big four, as we described up here in Canada. You've got the hockey, you've got the baseball, you've got the basketball, you've got the football. But they're a city, it seems, that will support all of those teams.
Well, they'll support them as long as they're winning. You know, from my experience with the Rockies, we've had a few seasons where we haven't shown a lot of progress, and people kind of quit coming out to the ballpark. When the Rockies first started, they would, you know, win or lose, they'd sell out 55,000 every night. Now we're lucky to get 25,000. But you know, if we were to start winning like the Broncos do or the Avalanche do, you know, there's no question we could get 55,000 every night again.
So how you guys doing, Jeff? But let's get into you first off. Last season, very much improved from the year before. I got to say, Jeff, to be honest, a great ERA in Colorado, 4.16. Don't know your opinion. 13-11, though. The win total was down one from the year before, but still a solid season. You happy with the way things went personally last year?
For the most part, I think I was. You know, I think as a pitcher, you always want to do better. You always think there's more in you than what I showed. So hopefully this season I can improve on it. But, you know, overall, I think I contributed a lot to the team, and hopefully, you know, I can go out there again this year and you know, prove it some more.
So what are you working on to improve right now?
Just getting ready for spring training. I don't, you know, I don't add anything on in the off season. I don't, you know, try to trick anybody. I don't think there's any fooling anybody what I do out on the mound. I just need to get better at what I do. And that's, you know, controlling the ball in the strike zone and changing speeds and trying to keep hitters guessing.
So when is spring training? You report in about 2 weeks here? Is that about right?
Just over a week. Yeah, on the 15th.
So what? Let me ask you this, Jeff. So spring training, I'm sure, is a whole different story. But between now and then, what is your daily routine? How are you getting ready? How many hours are you putting in a day? What's your schedule right now?
Well, every morning during the week, maybe 3 hours at this point. You know, the off season tends to drag on. You know, you kind of get the itch to get down to the hot weather, especially the way the weather's been here in Denver. You know, we haven't been able to step outside to do anything, so everybody's kind of getting the itch. And you know, the heavyweight lifting's kind of on the back burner. We're just, you know, doing running mostly and getting the arm in shape to do pitching.
Awesome. So Jeff Francis with us right now from Denver, Colorado. So Jeff, last season, Colorado 76-86, 12 games, really out of a playoff spot. You had the wild card and the division winner in your division. So, you know, you lost Jason Jennings. You traded him away to Houston. How are things looking for you guys this year? What do you guys have to do?
Well, you know, like you said it in the record, 12 games out of first place. You know, we were right in first place until the mid-July. And I think the inexperience on our team got the best of us, and we went on a big losing skid after the All-Star break. And I think we found ourselves in positions where we didn't know what to do. And hopefully the experience will be better for us this year. I know we lost Jennings. That was tough, but we got a good center fielder in return and a couple of good pitching prospects. So hopefully they can help us out at the back end of the rotation and have some consistency. And, you know, we'll always be scoring runs, so that's never really a question.
Jeff, I just got to ask you, because they're in your division, I have to do this, is I'm a lifelong Dodger fan. That is, Dodgers and Canucks are my two favorite teams, no question about it. And when I'm older, I hope to live in San Diego. So those are two of your opponents right now. But Dodger Stadium, got to ask you, what's it like to pitch there?
It's quite unbelievable. It's the loudest stadium I've ever seen or heard and been in. You know, I'm standing out there on the mound, and I can almost not hear myself think, because they're so loud there, and they shake everything. The stadium feels like it's going to come down on you, but it's a fun place to pitch if you're doing well. If you're not doing well, it gets even louder. So fortunately, the short few times I've pitched there, I've done fairly well, and it really makes you feel like a big leaguer, that's for sure.
And San Diego, you know, it's a new ballpark there, but what's it like pitching in that city?
San Diego is everything that people think Southern California is. You know, Los Angeles really isn't. Los Angeles is dirty and smoggy, and you go to San Diego, it's, you know, the bright blue water, the sand beach, and the beautiful warm weather, and nothing beats it. You never get bad weather pitching there, and the fans are even good to road teams. If you make a good play or have a good game, you know, they appreciate it like good baseball fans.
Yeah, that's why I know Los Angeles. I don't want to live there, Jeff. I want to live in San Diego, be a Padres season ticket holder, and root for the Dodgers when they come to town. That would be all right, wouldn't it?
Well, I don't know how well you'd fare as a Dodger fan in San Diego, but, you know, I guess they're not as rabid as the football fans, so you might get under the radar.
Oh, and I plan on being about 75. Nobody's going to mess with an old man.
So. Well, we'll see.
What's your favorite ballpark to pitch in, though, Jeff? I know it's probably not Denver. I have to say that, but what's your favorite ballpark to pitch in the National League?
Well, I would have to say Denver, just because okay. It's home, and I've had most of my success there. You know, it's a home ballpark, and you're at home, your routine, you're sleeping in your own bed, and it's just like, it seems like every time you go out on the mound there, you feel like you got your best stuff, so I'm most comfortable there, and, you know, you never think you'd hear a pitcher say it, but yeah. I think it is my favorite place to pitch.
Is it are people making too big of a deal of how hard it is to pitch? Is that one of your goals, is to maybe disprove that theory?
I think we did a lot of that last year, you know, as a staff, not just me. We had a lot of games last year that were the total runs scored were less than 5 runs, and we had teams coming in complaining that we were misusing the humidor, that we were cheating, and I don't think people gave our pitchers enough credit that we were actually pitching well there and having low scoring games. I think we disproved that and that it can be done. I mean, it is difficult. But it's difficult to pitch anywhere.
Who accused you of cheating, Jeff?
The Oakland A's did.
Really?
Yeah, their manager did. The Rangers came in. And even players who aren't playing anymore, who used to play for the Rockies, who, you know, they come watch the game and they say they can't believe that the ball doesn't fly anymore, that we must be doing something to the balls. Or I don't know. They just don't want to give us credit for some reason. Even the writers of the newspaper sometimes.
Really? Jeff, one thing I want to get into with you is, have you seen the website baseballreference.com?
No.
Okay. It's just a stat geek's dream website. I don't know if you ever want to touch it, but they do a thing where you can actually just type in, you're easy to find, and then you can type in what each hitter is doing against you. It's in alphabetical order, and I just found a few here. And I got to start off with, you know, it was the Jewish Community Center Sports Dinner last night. What's up?
What?
It was the Jewish Community Center Sports Dinner last night, so I got to bring this guy up. Sean Green, why are you so dominant against him?
Why do you have to bring it up? Because now that we're bringing it up and talking about it, then now he's going to go off and go knock off 10 straight hits off me.
Okay, we'll bring up any more guys.
Bring up the guys that are doing well off me. Don't bring up the guys that can't get a hit.
Okay, well, I guess I just had to try to help out a fellow Jewish guy there. So
yeah, I understand.
We'll bring up the other guys. Ray Durham, what's going on there? 10 for 21 against you, 7 RBIs, reached base 13 out of 24. What's going on with Ray Durham?
There's some guys in the league, whether they're good or bad players. I mean, nobody's really bad players, but some guys, they just have your number, and some guys, you have theirs, and sometimes you don't feel like there's anything that can change that. And usually there's one or two guys on every team, and Durham's definitely one of those guys on the Giants that, you know, if he's coming up against me late in the game with runners on base, if the game's on the line, manager's taking me out.
So people are aware of this, eh?
Yeah, the manager's got those numbers in the dugout all the time.
Right. And the obvious one, and I'm sure you've been asked this one before, the Canadian guy, your BC boy, Jason Bay.
Yeah.
7 for 9, 2 homers, 5 RBIs, and you've walked them twice.
Well, the walked them twice was probably after all the RBIs. I realized I couldn't get them out, that I'd have to resort to that because all the guys in front of him were getting on base, and he's coming up with runners on, and I can't afford to do that anymore. So
right, are you friends with Jason at all? You played on that World Cup thing with the Baseball Classic with him, didn't you?
Yeah, I know him a little bit. You know, whenever we cross paths and play against each other, we always meet up and catch up a little bit. So yeah, we know each other a little bit.
And is that something you do hope to do again, Jeff? Do you think it should be done? And what format? Because, you know, Canadian baseball, there's a lot of great young players. I mean, obviously, you know, Justin Morneau getting the MVP in the American League. And, a lot, you know, Adam Loewen starting to come on a lot better. Eric Bedard on Baltimore also. Do you want them to do that form, that kind of tournament again? And what do you think the format should be?
Well, I think it's a great tournament. I know all of us on the team had a blast, you know, playing in it. The results could have been a bit better, but it's a tough tournament just in the timing of it, in the way to run it. I mean, you couldn't run it after the season because everybody's burnt out or either that or in the playoffs. And, you know, they ran it during spring training, which raised questions about players getting ready for the actual season or getting hurt and not being able to compete for their own team. But that's probably the best way to do it.
Right.
You know, even though you really couldn't find a perfect way to do it.
No, and I take it the other one, just from watching it, it seemed that the Cuban team and both of the Asian teams, they were sort of priming their players. I could be wrong here, but it seemed like they were trying to prime their players to peak for this tournament almost, where you guys were just sort of, you were in spring training mode pretty much.
Yeah, I think that was the case for most of the American players. you know, as well as us, because, you know, we're there to play in the big leagues. But a lot of these countries, that's the World Series for them.
Yeah.
You know, they play for their country. That's it. You know, especially countries like Cuba, where not a lot of their players get to come here to play baseball.
So
to play for their country, that's everything to them. So that's their World Series.
And one of the questions, just on a personal level, Jeff, is, you know, you're a pitcher, and one of the big worries is maybe I thought it was going to be is a lot of the GMs and the owners would be complaining that maybe their pitchers were going to hurt themselves pitching too much in these tournaments. As a pitcher, are you okay pitching in a tournament like that before spring training starts?
Yeah, I was fine with it. I mean, I had probably the worst game of my life in that tournament. I think every pitcher was ready to go in there and you know, pitch for their country. It's a risk you take playing the game anywhere, you know, whether you're pitching in spring training or pitching in this tournament. I think they laid down the rules for limits on pitch counts and the innings pitchers could throw, and I think they did that because of the worries of the GMs of their pitchers going to pitch for their countries. And I think it addressed that well.
Awesome. Jeff, I do appreciate you doing this. Thanks a bundle. I called you just before the show, and you said yes, and I do thank you for it. And have a great season, okay?
All right, thanks a lot.
And I'm sorry to say, I still do have to root for the Dodgers. I am sorry to say that. But I'll root for you. Is that okay?
That's fine with me.
Awesome. You don't need me. Jeff Francis, okay. Jeff, I appreciate it as always.
All right.
Thanks, Jeff.
Bye.
Okay, that was Jeff Francis. Love doing that one. What a guy. And I got to just, that's something I'll keep my eye on. Sean Green, 0-15 against Jeff Francis. And according to Jeff, he's now going to rack off about 10 hits in a row against him. I doubt it. Jeff's doing just terrific up there, and we'll follow him as the year goes on. Okay, we are going to take our final break right now on Wiener's Barbecue. You are listening to 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Tom Wolski from the Vancouver province and the Sport of Kings television show will be with us. We're getting into some horse racing talk, and we are going to have to get into it was last week's event, but I was sick last week, couldn't be here, and I really wanted to talk to Tom about it, is the death of Barbaro, the racehorse, won the Kentucky Derby last year. It looked like it was going to perhaps win that Triple Crown and, of course, got hurt in the Preakness, and it was put down last week. So we'll talk to Tom about Barbaro. And also, Tom, we'll get into a little Bill Walton talk. So we'll be right back. Okay, you are listening to 101.9 FM CITR Radio, Vancouver, Canada. I just said that, so I said it again. Tom Wolski from the Vancouver province and the Sport of Kings television show in a moment. Okay, everybody, welcome back to Wieners Barbecue here on 101.9 FM. And joining us on the line right now, Tom Wolski from the Vancouver Province and the Sport of Kings television show. So, Tom, how's your Tuesday going?
Not too bad, Dale. I'm fighting a little head cold like you were last week, but I'm still carrying on.
We got to carry on, don't we?
Well, I think a lot of people have it. And so to answer your question, yeah, we have to carry on.
So, yeah, and you saw me yesterday after the sports dinner. I was wearing that warm Canadian toque.
I was impressed. You wore the toque.
Yeah, well, you know, I had to walk home, Tom. I had to, you know, keep that bald head warm.
Well, you walked home, and Bobby Ackles and Wally Bowman and myself, we must have waited an hour and a half for our car.
No.
So you were home in bed before we probably left.
What was it?
You did the right thing, which we all will do next time. But it was a great dinner, though.
Yeah. Two not bad guys to get caught up with there, Bob Ackles and Wally Bono, at least.
Yeah, they're nice guys, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And I enjoyed very much talking to them waiting outside there. But the sports dinner, I do like to say, I intro'd us there, and I've been playing it all show today. I am a Grateful Dead fan, and I was playing Jerry Garcia there. I've been playing it all day on my show. you think Bill Walton did a little too much Grateful Dead yesterday?
Not really, but you know where I was sitting from, and believe me, it was a good evening. I had trouble hearing him a little bit because maybe it's because I'm having trouble hearing my right ear. But I asked a couple of other people because Bill he projects high and low because he really tells a story, and he's so tall. And I thought that maybe the mic was might have been a little too low. But how was your hearing?
I was at a point where I could hear. But there were two people next to me that would whisper every once in a while, and when they whispered, I couldn't hear them.
Yeah, because when he told the story, he emphasized certain points, and then he dropped down to put the little mystique into his story, and that's what kind of got hard. So if people were talking, you were in trouble.
Oh, yeah, you couldn't miss a beat. And you know what, though? Did you see he was rehearsing his speech before he went on? Did you see it? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, he was rehearsing it. You could see him, like, reading it and everything. What I liked about him was he didn't mail it in last night, you know? He put on a show.
Oh, he had it in. He had the Nash's address in Victoria. it was pretty clever.
And, well, you heard the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar story at that dinner, hey?
I was there.
Oh, you heard, I just heard the story. Was it that bad?
It was pretty brutal. He wasn't on long, and while he was on, all he discussed was why he couldn't get a job as a coach in the NBA, and he named a bunch of teams that he thought he should have had a chance to pitch, and that's all he did. He tried to pitch himself a job and complained why he wasn't working within the NBA, and that was he was on like for 20 minutes.
I actually heard it was 7 or 8 minutes, his particular speech.
Okay, but so I wasn't far wrong, was I?
It seemed longer than it actually was. I guess it was that bad. But
yeah, well, 10 minutes on a 10 minutes for speech when you're getting paid big bucks—that's kind of short.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Are you a Grateful Dead fan at all, Tom Wolski?
Quite honestly, no. In fact, I've never heard them.
Okay, because I didn't come with my recorder yesterday, but I sat down with Bill Walton. He was just—I don't know when you got there, if you saw him, but he was—you could pretty much just walk up to him and talk to him. Hey, before, and I walked up to him. And I didn't, this is what came out of my mouth. I go, my parents, when I was in grade 11, they didn't let me go to the Grateful Dead in Seattle in 1995. And am I worse off? What did I miss out on more? Was it seeing a basketball game at the Boston Gardens or the Grateful Dead? And actually, he told me, A, never listen to your parents, and B, that I missed out on both. So
pretty cool.
That's my words of wisdom. What's up?
He's quite approachable.
Oh yeah, it was great.
Very approachable, and you know, like I said, he was probably one of the. They always, I would say 80% of the time the JCG hits it on the mark with their speakers, and 20% like is with Jabbar was one of them. We were talking about that today actually, Jim Robson and Cookie Gilchrist. We were talking about it over breakfast about the guests that they've had. And I think Tom Landry and Big Ben Davidson weren't too good. Tom Landry wasn't too good. They've had maybe only a handful of duds. But
people loved Hurricane Carter.
He was great.
I didn't. Yeah, and Don Cherry and Ron McLean were apparently a big.
They were good, and Dennis Hall was excellent.
Oh, I heard that. That's right. I heard that.
And Bill Boughton wasn't too bad, however you pronounce his name.
Oh, Jim Boughton.
Jim Boughton.
Yeah, and apparently Larry Zonka was good.
Yeah, I wasn't there for Zonka. I was out of town.
That's okay, and I love Tommy Lasorda.
Yeah, he was good. Always good.
And a lot of people didn't like Roy Firestone. I don't know if you saw that one. He did a song. I liked it. He did a song and dance routine.
I thought it's good, and he imitates a lot of people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, he did straight stand up. But you know, he does have a Vegas act.
Well, he put it on for us that night.
He does have a Vegas act, you know, so it's hard to believe he's a sportscaster and a good one, and also he does his own stick in Vegas.
And just to sort of wrap up the sports dinner is Jeff Francis, the old UBC pitcher.
Uh-huh.
I just had him on the show just before you right now, and he was actually at the Phoenix Suns game last night. In Denver, because he's down there just getting ready for spring training right now. Or he's, you know, spring training starts in a week, and he's gone down to Denver already. And he's so disappointed still. Nash got hurt in the first quarter of that game. He says he's still upset about it.
Oh, I bet, huh? I bet a lot of people are upset because he's so much fun to watch. I mean, they're the most exciting team to watch in the NBA by far. In fact, whenever they play, if I can get them, I watch them. Because I want to watch Nash, Stoudemire. I mean, they're just so cool. I mean, they make it exciting because they do run and gun.
Do you think they've got it in them to win that championship, though, or to get to that championship this year?
Well, I think if they can keep everybody sound. They're not a real big team, are they?
No, and they have to have Stoudemire, hey?
Yeah.
So
definitely they need Stoudemire, and they need Nash also. But, you know, but they have a nice team because they play off each other, and it's the old cliche, Steve Nash makes everybody play better, which he does. But I mean, I don't know if they're strong enough to last the whole season, one or for two. A couple of those teams are pretty big that they're going to be facing.
Did you like his old high school coach's speech last night at the dinner?
I thought it was very inspirational.
Yeah.
Did you like it?
I liked it, actually. It was almost a little over the top, but it was good.
Well, it showed you all the praise. And, you know, all the praise and for Nash, myself, he's well worth everything that people say about him because I have my own Nash story about 7 years. I don't know, when did the Team Canada play at UBC?
Oh, I don't know. That might have been before I got here.
No, about 5 years. Well, when did Nash go turn pro?
Nash turned pro about 7-8 years ago.
No, he was already pro, and he was up for Jay Triano was coaching the team, the National, and they had a game at UBC, and Wally and I, the AG Wally Opel and I went to the game, and after the game, it was like 10:30. Nash stuck around for maybe an hour and a half, signing autographs, taking pictures, and if someone didn't have someone to take a picture, he would hold the camera in front and take the picture of him and whoever it was.
Oh, wow.
And then that was my first time that I saw Nash off, away from the basketball. And he showed that what you see is what you get with him. Such a classy individual. And Wally and I have often talked about it. What an inspirational person for kids.
One of the great tragedies in the history of Vancouver sports, is it the fact that Stu Jackson was stupid enough not to bring him here?
Yeah, and they didn't do their homework when they went for Francis.
Yeah, well, and you know what? I heard Stu Jackson on a radio station this year. He almost doesn't regret not bringing Steve Nash here. It's almost like he's in denial about it.
I don't think they really, you know, deep down I have a feeling that they didn't want this thing to go in one sense because when Heisley didn't want it to go, obviously, because he's trying to flog the team now.
Yeah.
But he can't get buyers.
Yeah.
Because he wants too much money for it. And that's what his business was. He was a salvager. He would buy companies, clean them out, and then redo them. And that's what that was... Well, how about hiring Don Nelson?
What's wrong with Don Nelson?
Well, Nelson stayed. Was it Nelson that he hired? He hired someone that's lived in Florida to oversee the team.
Oh, really? I don't know. I haven't followed it that much.
I
got to
pick that one up. Yeah, Don Nelson's not in the business right now, is he?
I don't,
he is.
I don't think so.
Well,
I'm not sure.
It was Don Nelson, and he had retired, and Heisley hired him to oversee Dick Vassay, and they paid him big bucks, and all he did was watch the scout the games on TV off satellite. And
can I have that job?
And, well, everybody wanted. I mean, it was a standard joke in the media. I mean, why do we have him? And it was a case where they wanted to spend money to make it look like they were losing money. That will always be my observation about that. Because I still think we could have supported them.
Tom, just to go back a bit, we've done the Grizzlies before. We could do them again. But what were you doing out for? That's a neat breakfast group you had with Kent Gilchrist and Jim Robson. What were you guys up to this morning?
We have a little group that we meet about once every 6 weeks. It's a pretty good group, you know, and you don't like the name drop, but it's a hell of a group. Cookie's there, Wally's, Judge Opal's there, the mayor, the old mayor, Larry Campbell. I'll do it. Larry Campbell is there, Cookie, Jim Robson, Jim Burns, Manny Sobro, Vicky Gabrielle, Bob McCammon. We mix it up pretty good.
Really?
And when I can get these guys together, it's tough. We've been doing it for about eight or nine years, and we meet once every 6 weeks at a restaurant. And our criteria is to have a round table. Believe it or not, other restaurants have heard of our group, and they try to pitch us to go to a restaurant. And when you go there, you tell them you need a round table. They tell you we got a table will fit you. And once again, it's just a straight long table, and it's not fun to have 10 people. I have to cut it down every once in a while, but to have 10 people, you need them at a round table. And there's only one restaurant that does it, and I'm not here to plug them, but that's Quattro's. It's the only place in town on 4th that has a round table, so we do this about every 6 weeks. And last time we did it at Joe Forday's because they really treat us well there. But it's a good group, and you know the common denominator is sports.
Cool. And you know, I'm Jewish, and, you know, with the sports dinner, I help out with it. You guys like the way they're doing it at that sports dinner? We've got positive feedback.
I don't have a problem at all with it. I think they do. I think it does. It's good for charity. It's good for the community, and they bring a lot of people. They spend a lot of money because that live auction. They were spending some serious dollars. So to answer your question, yeah, I like the way they do it.
Yeah, my dad doesn't actually. My dad liked it when they used to do it, and they didn't spend huge money bringing in the guests, and it was just sort of a fun little boys' night out.
Well, I remember
this was about 20 years ago. He liked it.
I haven't gone that much. Oh, I think back to speakers. Probably I know on the JCC, but perhaps the worst speaker that they had was Jimmy the Greek Snyder, when he was there and he was the main speaker getting the big bucks.
Right.
And we heard like 10,000 or whatever back. That's a lot of money. And the sub speaker or the co-feature was a fellow called Lou Holtz.
And
nobody knew. Not, I would say 75% of the people there did not know who Lou Holtz was, and didn't care. And Jimmy the Greek came on and did 15 minutes, and he was brutal. And Lou Holtz got on and was saying, "Well, who the hell is this guy, Lou Holtz?" And he got up and talked for like an hour and 20 minutes. He didn't even use the microphone. He pitched his voice so far back. He's a professional motivational speaker, besides being one of the greatest football coaches out.
Yeah.
And he was so good. And that's one of my most vivid memories of the JCC dinners is Jimmy the Greek bombing, and Lou Holtz, who nobody knew, was just too much. He was probably one of the best motivational speakers that I've seen.
Cool. On to horse racing right now, Tom. Discuss the, you know, we had some tragedy taking place in your sport last week. Barbaro was put down, ending the life of that horse. What does that mean, and what's been said since that happened?
Well, you know, a lot has come out of that, because he had an that's a disease that, it's a million to one a horse are going to survive that laminitis, and for the laminitis, for the Jacksons to even do that was amazing that they thought they could save him. And they're well to do anyway. They had a they do have an insurance policy on them, but who knows how much money they spent. And I remember listening to a quote, listening to Dr. Richardson talking about it when somebody asked him about, well, what was the cost, and it really ticked off Dean Richardson. He said, the cost of entering this, into this picture was a case we were trying to save a life. And if anything, with Barbara's death, and this is verbatim what he said, he says, I know I learned something from the time that I spent with him about maybe helping horses down the road who get laminitis. So he's going to leave a legacy in so many ways. People have learned about the disease, and like I said, it's practically incurable. And then it showed the compassion that the Jackson have. And they, like so many other owners, they're in it for the money, obviously, but it's more than the money. It's you do love the animal. And I was proud to be part of the industry watching the way the Jackson's handling themselves so nicely, so classy. And I know it had to be a tough decision because we all knew it was going to happen sooner or later that this horse would have to be put down because, once again, a horse does not survive this. And I know firsthand, now 2 years ago we had a horse at Hastings called Rules of War, six of us, and he won the Richmond Derby, and he went into the B.C. Derby, and he stumbled leaving the gate, so he really didn't get a good run. But the next day in the stall, he developed laminitis. And you know what happens? Robbie Gilko, the trainer, was rubbing him, cleaning him off, and the foot fell right off. That's what laminitis does for you. That's why they had to put a cast. They were trying to rebuild his hoof, and the hoof falls off. And that's what laminitis is. It's a brutal way to say it, but that's what happens. So, and a horse has to have four legs. Some animals can make it on three legs, two legs, or whatever. A horse has to have all four legs on the ground because they're so big.
So Barbaro's foot had actually fallen off.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's what happened. That's why they remade the foot. And then when he started taking pressure off that, when he put it on the other one, then he injured the other one. And then the two back legs were hurting, and then he developed laminitis in the front legs, the two front ones, and that's when they realized the horse was going to eventually, was starting to feel discomfort. And as Dr. Richardson said, he knew that morning that when he looked in his eyes that he wasn't the same horse, and he called in the Jacksons and them got together, and they decided it was time to do what was right for the horse at the time and put him down. And like I said, who knows how much the medical bills will be? But it didn't mean anything. Money was not the object there; it was to save a horse's life. And it shows our industry is more of it's. You know, our industry is pretty good. I mean, people, because it's gambling, we have criticism. But they criticize every sport.
Yeah, I know.
And they criticize the NHL. Now the NFL is taking a beating for the way they treat their retired players. You heard about that one.
What's that?
The NFL.
Why? What are they doing? I didn't hear that, actually.
Last week on Brian Gumbel's show on Real Sports, he had Mike Ditka and Harry Carson's on two Hall of Fame players. And they went to, and Ditka was explaining how he was upset because the average NFL football player, when he retires, and they retire beat up, too.
Yeah.
$24,000 a year is what they get. The same tenure that a baseball player puts in with a football player is $148,000. And the medical bills, they went to before your time probably, but they visited a couple of old retired players, and one of them was Conrad Dobler, who was known as one of the dirtiest players in the league. But back then they played dirty with the year of Butkus. And these guys barely can walk. They're just 60 years old, and they have the medical bills don't get paid by the NFL.
Yeah, well, the other example, I think they paid Mike Webster, the former Steelers center, I believe.
Well, they got a lawsuit on him, but yeah,
no, they paid out. I think they paid his estate about $2 million or something.
That's because they had the lawyers on Brian Gumbel's show, and that's why they got the money. Yeah. They had to sue to get the money off the NFL, from my understanding. And there's a lawsuit pending right now, too. They had a player, I forgot his name, he looked like he was 65, and the interview asked him, how old are you? And he said, I'm 44. And that's how beat up he was. And I remember one time in the Chicago airport, I was walking to my plane, and who was in front of me was Dick Butkus. And he could just about walk. he was, you know, this is about 5 years ago, he could just about walk, and it tells you the toll that football, you know, that it takes on you. But there's billions of dollars in that pool, and the thing is, the retirement fund is the money that's given out is okayed by the active players, and that's where the problem is. The active players do not want to. Oh, Gene Upshaw. They asked him about it because he represents the active players.
Yeah, head of the players union. Yeah.
Yeah, and he gets his salary is $2 to $3 million a year. And Ditka asked him, along with Brian Gumbel, you know, why don't you look after the retired players? And he says, because I don't get paid by them. And this is the actual quote: I don't get paid by the retired players. My salary is paid by the active players. And Ditka says, you're throwing the retired players to the wolves, and basically good. That's what they're doing.
Good for Ditka to stand up for these guys, actually.
Ditka started the fund.
He doesn't have to.
No, part of his money that he makes off his wrestling, in Chicago, he donates to the retired players fund.
He doesn't need the money. Ditka doesn't.
No.
But then, and the other one, it was actually, Tom, we got to wrap it up here, I'm out of time. But the other one is the hockey players actually had the similar thing where I think the hockey players back in the 50s and 60s sued about their pension, and none of the current players, this is about 10 years ago,
yep.
I think, and none of the current players stood up for them.
Yeah, it's a bitch. It really is. You know, and like I said, whenever you and I go on the air, it's kind of cool. That's why I enjoy doing a show with you, because, yeah, we talk about horses, but we also talk about other things, and hopefully we enlighten our audience a little bit with what is in our minds, or people that we've met in our lives, and maybe let them